Good morning, Mike.
Morning, buddy.
Good morning, Patrick.
Morning, buddy.
Welcome to episode 498 about the Liberal Party. I'm joking, but only kind of. We're talking about the Liberals again this week, but it's not just about the federal opposition. There's been a lot of movement in Victoria and New South Wales with leadership challenges in both states. Let's cut right to the chase. Who is Jess Wilson?
I think you'd say she's a kind of moderate Liberal out of central casting. She's a former political advisor at the federal level. She's a lawyer. She worked for KPMG advising multinationals on tax policy. She represents the blue ribbon Victorian seat of Q. The point of difference is that she's young. She's 35, so she's the first millennial
leader. I love to
hear
that 35 is young.
Yeah.
35-year-old leader of the Victorian Liberal Party.
And she took over from Brad Batten, who was a former police officer and sort of a very different type of leader. Most of his, you know, rhetoric was around crime, policing and so on, whereas Jessica Wilson has put forward a broader range of policies around housing, and particularly putting the Victorian economy in front and centre of her campaign to defeat the Labor government, which has been in power there for 11 years.
Yeah, according to the federal senator, James Patterson, she's a next generation leader who understands the pressures facing young families with the cost of living and home ownership because she's lived them too. Yeah, I'm not sure if being a lawyer and working for KPMG and the Business Council quite puts you in the same category as most people feeling the cost of living pressures, but she is quite different from the previous leadership. She has very limited experience, hasn't been in government, so she's a risk, but the Libs in Victoria have been in such a terrible state of shambles for so many years that basically they've been allowing the Labor government, which is not overwhelmingly popular, I think it's fair to say, a pretty free run for a long time and looking relatively set fair for the next election as well, which is next year, the end of next year. So it's a gamble, but obviously they feel the need to connect with a younger audience, a female audience, family audience that the other recent leaders have not done so.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting thing about it really is just that they're banking all their hopes on a first-term MP who has no experience in government.
It's quite extraordinary. Yeah. 3 years ago elected to Parliament and now in leadership. What do you think it says about the state of the Liberal Party in Victoria to elevate someone with so little experience?
I think it says that they're out of options. They've been through a few leaders, they've tried a few different things, and they've got nothing to lose, really. So they're at this point where they're looking for someone who can reinvent the party in an image that's much closer to the modern electorate.
Mike, you referenced how long the Labor government in Victoria has been in power, 11 years. Are there any particularly unique issues which are keeping Liberals in opposition in Victoria that are different to the rest of Australia?
I mean, mostly their own failings, I think.
Their own worst enemy.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen these unbelievable disputes in the Liberal Party surrounding Moira Deeming and John Pesutto, the previous leader, but one which kind of tore the party apart over many months when they were hoping to, you know, capitalise on Dan Andrews' longevity in office and then with the transition to Jacinta Allan to have a new leader. That didn't happen because they were just too busy fighting amongst themselves with lawsuits, bankruptcies. She brought up two things in an interview on Sky with Peter Credlin that she was going to make her focus. One was property taxes that she said are making property unaffordable in Victoria, and the other is the kind of general malaise in the state and feeling of staleness and drift, I guess, which is what you would expect a party to be targeting when the governing party has been in power for 11 years. I think that's a much more fruitful line of attack because Victoria is, in fact, the one state, as we discussed last week, where they have managed to keep a lid on rising property prices and people, they do have a lot of public debt, but they're also producing a lot of infrastructure projects such as the new metro. They can claim that that's the result of public investment. So the government does have a story to tell on those two issues, whereas I think normally you would expect the sense of it's time for a change. They've been in power too long, they're stale. You would expect that to be a fruitful line of attack.
I think there's a real question here for the media, though. if you look at Sky News or certainly the Herald Sun and other News Corp publications, they've been going quite hard on the Allan government over crime. But when you look at the reality of the situation and the economy, Victoria is doing quite well on a few different metrics. Crime is actually not, hasn't increased in Victoria. The crime stats are actually pretty good. So I think this is part of the problem where a lot of the political class in the Liberal Party and the National Party get sucked into this ecosystem where they think that an issue like crime will resonate with the electorate, and Brad Batten went pretty hard on it. You know, some people were saying he's a one-trick pony on it, but it failed to connect with the electorate. And I think part of the move towards Jessica Wilson has been to broaden out that suite of issues that they want to talk to the electorate about.
Also, gambling on someone like Wilson may seem like an attractive option given the state that the Victorian Liberals are in, but not everyone is completely convinced that she has the personality to pull this off. Like Neil Mitchell, who plays a significant role in shaping public opinion on Victorian commercial radio, said about her, "A lot of people who know her tell me she is a warm and pleasant person, but that doesn't come across at the moment. She is robotic, she is wooden. She needs to be authentic and talk to people at them at the moment she's talking at them." So he said she sounds and looks like the head prefect at the moment. So she does have a bit of work to do to get the media on her side, the influential media on her side in Victoria.
Well, the head prefects can also have their good points, can't it? But it's not surprising that she's not a relaxed performer when she's only been
totally.
In the public
she's
eye for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
And head prefect kind of vibe can work. Gladys Berejiklian was quite popular in her time in government.
True. Ultimate
kind of vibe.
Prefect.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And now we'll just turn our attention to New South Wales. A new leader of the Nationals Party has been elected, Gaurmesh Singh. And as we record this, there is reporting that there is a move on New South Wales Liberal leader Mark Speakman. We'll stay on the National Party for a second, though. Gaurmesh is the first Indian-Australian leader of a major party in Australia. Do you think this is a sign of a changing National Party?
So Anne Davies, our New South Wales political correspondent, wrote an interesting piece about Gaurmesh Singh and what's going on in the coalition in New South Wales. He's a bit of a different candidate. Most Nationals leaders, pastoralists or graziers from the central west. He is a fourth generation farmer from the mid-north coast of New South Wales, growing blueberries. But he's also worked in advertising and marketing, I think. So he brings a bit of a different background to the usual Nationals leader.
I mean, he's clearly a leader unlike most National Party leaders we've seen federally and in New South Wales. But I think the main thing that distinguishes the Nationals in New South Wales from their federal counterparts is sort of where they have landed on the net zero question, which is kind of, they haven't been anything like as virulent on it as their federal counterparts. Gaurmesh Singh has landed on a sort of woolly, ambiguous position where he's trying not to contradict his federal colleagues, but also not completely derivate from coalition policy in New South Wales, which is still to support a net zero target. That's a terribly difficult position to land, and good luck to him with it. But I think that is what's going to really test him as a leader in how the coalition in New South Wales manages to paper over the crack that has been sort of foisted on them by the goings-on in the federal coalition.
On Mark Speakman, do you think a change in leadership would improve the prospects of the New South Wales Liberals?
I think the New South Wales Liberals are in a very different position to their Victorian colleagues. They have much less of a hill to climb to get back into government, less seats to win back. They also haven't had the kind of leadership ructions and divisions of the Victorian Liberal Party, although they have had their own problems, certainly at the local council level, where they forgot to pre-select candidates. Mark Speakman certainly, I think, has failed to cut through against Chris Minns, who seems like a fairly kind of media-savvy operator. So a lot of people are thinking Kelly Sloan, who's a former TV presenter and journalist, may have a bigger presence on the state politics stage and might be able to be a little bit more effective at cutting through to the electorate.
I mean, you say the coalition has a smaller hill to climb in New South Wales, but its polling is pretty terrible. They're on about 28% in the most recent state polls. So people are not generally impressed, have not generally been impressed with Speakman's leadership. I don't think he, as you say, he's failed to land punches on Chris Minns, who has sort of aroused opposition in some quarters, but mostly on the left. On their new leader, I mean, again, at the time of recording, we don't know if there's going to be a challenge at all and if there is one, who's going to win it. But if it is Kelly Sloan, again, it's a big, would be a big risk in the same way that the Victorian one would be. She's much older than Jessica Wilson. She's in her early 50s, but she's similarly untested as a minister or an opposition spokesperson. She would be a gamble in a similar way. And again, they're sort of hoping that her presentation, she's a former journalist, so she's good at communication, but they're hoping that just having a fresh leader who's a woman, has a family, has teenage children, gives them a different look. And whether that's enough, again, it is a gamble.
The Liberal Party in general, state by state and also federally, has been plagued by issues around women. Representation in the party is pretty woeful, and although they've elevated Susan Lee as leader, we can't exactly say that that's going swimmingly. However, polling also shows very low support among Gen Z and millennials. Millennials are now in their 40s, so that's a very significant part of the electorate. Is there an existential threat to the Liberal Party, or is this just life in opposition?
Opposition is certainly hard. No one enjoys being in opposition, but I think it's an existential crisis for the Liberal Party as a whole. They're being pushed on both sides, by the Teals on that side and by Conservatives in the party on the other side. Their polling, you know, there's some recent polling that came out that showed that they're at their worst level since Federation. Costa Maris, the pollster in Victoria for Redbridge, said they're fragmenting in real time and they're at sort of the levels where it's around 1 in 5 people would actually consider voting for the coalition, 24%. So, yeah, it's a crisis for the Liberal Party at the moment. Polls can change. You know, as politicians say, the only poll that matters is the one on election day, but they all look at them every day when they come out. So, I think it is a crisis and they're paying attention to it.
It must be a cold comfort when you're polling at 28%.
I mean, that generational breakdown in the Redbridge poll published in the Financial Review was pretty extraordinary. Among Gen Zs, the coalition were polling at 10% compared with the Greens at 24% and Labor at 51%. And then it just steps up as you go up through the generations. Among millennials, the coalition were on 23%, then on Gen X, 26%, and baby boomers, a huge 30%. Even among baby boomers, it's only 30%, but it just shows where the challenge is. I think that particularly right down at the very youngest levels of the electorate, they are struggling massively. And that 10%, if that was reflected further up the age groups, or if the age groups continue, don't change their mind as they grow older, that is definitely an existential crisis. That's terrible.
There was an interesting YouGov poll that looked at former coalition voters as well. There's a serious question about whether they can be won back at some point, whether they've lost them for good in seats like the Teal seats. It found 26% of Australians who are former coalition voters wouldn't consider seriously voting for the coalition in the future. 1 in 2 said they would only give the party a vote if they had credible policies on climate. And the things that keep on coming up are issues like gender, like climate. And, you know, I think a lot of voters are exhausted with the constant focus on culture wars from the conservative side of politics.
I think for the Libs, it's sort of like a vicious circle. The more conservative members are pre-selecting conservative candidates in many cases, and the more moderate candidates in the Teal seats have left Parliament now. So both the MP cohort and the membership cohort are increasingly in that turning ever smaller circles within their own bubble. And it's turning the party it's making the party unelectable to a large extent, particularly among young voters.
And also what you see is when that party membership base is hollowed out, it's really susceptible to influence from small groups outside the party. There's been a lot of reporting done over religious groups who have, you know, been involved in the Liberal Party. So, yeah, that's a concern.
Yeah, and unlike Labor, they don't have an organisation similar to the unions to fall back on when it comes to elections to help them campaign. So they're increasingly depending on these third-party campaign groups for electioneering, and as we saw in the last election, that did not go well.
Next, ashes to ashes, affairs to affairs.
Hi, I'm Karishma Lusria, one of the producers here at Full Story. We're so glad you're here. Each episode is a team effort. Researching, interviewing, scripting, editing, and sound design. And we make it free, just like all Guardian journalism. We're not bankrolled by a billionaire, and we don't have any shareholders. Full Story is possible because people who value our work choose to support it. We're now running our annual end-of-year appeal. So if you can, please visit theguardian.com/support and help keep Full Story and our journalism open for all.
And now